Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamualaikum, shalom, mahaba, ciao, bonjour, namaste, jumbo. Bienvenidos. Hey, my name is Jet Li. This is Reading with Your Kids, coming to you with love from the historic neighborhood of Reedville, tucked into the southwest corner of beautiful Boston, Massachusetts. We are so delighted that you're joining us in our mission. And our mission here is all about connection, connecting kids with books, families with each other, and communities through the power of story. Every week, we're joined by incredible authors and creators whose work lights up kids' lives. You can support this mission by spreading the word. Share the show with your friends. Give us a shout out at school. And let everyone you know that they can hear us on the WREB AM/FM 24/7 radio network. And they can find us on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, Podcast Addict, Audible, Amazon Music, CastBox, YouTube, Player FM. Wherever you find your favorite shows, you can find Reading with Your Kids. Three wonderful guests for you today. First up, Carol Boston Weatherford and Takita Andrews are here to celebrate Let It Shine, a celebration of you. And later in the show, Lori Miller-Cass is here to celebrate her YA title, The Accident. Hey, my friends, you know one of my favorite parts of the day is story time. There's just something magical about snuggling up with your kids, opening a great book, and escaping into an adventure together. And let me tell you, that moment becomes even more magical when you're curled up in the softest, coziest bedding you've ever felt. That's why I'm so excited that CozyEarth.com is supporting Reading with Your Kids. Their bamboo sheets, comforters, and pajamas are unbelievably soft, naturally breathable, and temperature regulating, which means no more sweaty nights or chilly toes. Right now, Cozy Earth is offering Reading with Your Kids listeners an unbelievable and exclusive 41% off their entire site. That's right, you heard me right, 41% off. So go ahead, create your own cozy reading nook, wrap yourself and your kids up in something comfy, grab your favorite bedtime book, and turn story time into the best part of your day. Head on over to CozyEarth.com and use the promo code READ at checkout to save 41%. That's CozyEarth.com, promo code READ. Hey, this episode of Reading With Your Kids is brought to you by AspireDrinks.com. Hey, I have a quick question for you. Have you ever wanted a little extra energy, but not the kind that makes your heart race or leaves you crashing an hour later? Well, that's exactly why I want to tell you about Aspire Drinks. You'll find them at AspireDrinks.com. Aspire calls itself a healthy energy drink, and honestly, that description really fits. Instead of loading you up with sugar or extreme caffeine, Aspire delivers a gentle, steady boost with 80 milligrams of natural caffeine from green tea and guarana. That's about half the caffeine of most energy drinks, enough to help you stay focused without the jitters or the crash. It's also zero sugar, zero calories, and zero artificial additives, which makes it a great choice for parents, teachers, and anyone trying to make healthier choices while still getting things done. And get this, it actually tastes great. Light, crisp, and lightly sparkling with flavors like sweet cherry, raspberry acai, mango lemonade. That's what I love. No heavy aftertaste and easy on the stomach. Aspire is packed with B and C vitamins, biotin, and ginger. And it's vegan, gluten-free, keto-friendly, really designed for real life. And just for Reading with Your Kids listeners, you can get an exclusive discount of 20% off. That's the highest discount available when you shop at AspireDrinks.com and use our promo code READ. That's READ at AspireDrinks.com. Healthy energy done right. We have something very special for this episode of Reading with Your Kids. We're here to celebrate Let It Shine, a celebration of you. And we have the author and illustrator here. First up, coming to us from Baltimore, the author, Carol Boston Weatherford. Carol, how are you?
Doing great today.
And joining us from Virginia, the illustrator, Kitita Andrews. Kitita, how are you?
I'm doing well also. A little chilly, but I'm doing well.
Why don't we start with you, Carol? Let It Shine, A Celebration of You. Tell us all about this picture book, please.
Well, the idea was conceived by my editor, Sonali Fry, and the concept was to create a book that could be used for celebrations, milestones like birthdays, graduations, other successes, victories in athletic pursuits, milestones and celebrations, large and small. And so I decided to extend the spiritual Let It Shine with new lyrics that celebrated some of those milestones and also looked at how we got there, whose shoulders are we rising on, and what responsibility do we have because of our own successes. Mm-hmm. And so I extended the spiritual, which is one of the most beloved spirituals for children, Let It Shine. This Little Light of Mine, I'm going to let it shine.
Yeah. I love that. I love reminding kids not only of their uniqueness and that they're worthy to be celebrated, but also reminding them that there are people who kind of forged the way ahead of them and that we owe a kind of responsibility to them and to the community.
Right, right. And we have a responsibility not only to, we not only owe our forebears a debt of gratitude, but we have a responsibility moving forward to give back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think that's so very, very important. Takeda, what was your first impression? Now, this is, I haven't told you yet, this is the first time that Kara and Takeda have met through Zoom, and they're going to get together and possibly meet in person at some point. What was your reaction when you first received the manuscript?
Well, first, like Carol said, this is a very well-known and well-loved hymn that most kids learn when they're young. And so I was quite familiar with that. And when the book was pitched to me, it was basically, like she said, this thing about celebrating. And I was really excited. I was really excited because I was like, also because of the direction I was given for the book, it gave me a chance to shine a little bit when it came to creating the images for the book. So I was really excited about it.
Yeah, yeah. And again, Carol, your first impression when you received the final images?
I was impressed by, particularly impressed by the diversity of the characters, people with different shapes and sizes, different skin tones, differing abilities. So I was really, really pleased with that.
Yeah.
And the depiction, the depiction of such diversity that implies that anybody can be successful. We all have worth and we all have potential and can achieve that, can achieve something great, not only for ourselves, but for our community.
Yeah. Such an important message. Takeda, did you get intimidated sometimes because this is such an important message? And it's one thing to say it with words, but it's another thing kind of illustrate. And I'm saying this because I have zero visual art ability. Nothing. I couldn't do anything with that. I'm wondering, is this something you go, yeah, I know how to do this, or is it like, okay, big responsibility here?
Well, I think you go through all the feels when you are given an assignment. I think that when you are presented with these opportunities, you're like, okay, I can do this. But then when you sit down at the drawing board and you start to kind of think about how you're going to all bring it together, it can be intimidating. And that's kind of where it was with me, because honestly, I was pretty much given carte blanche with as far as artistic direction with this. They knew my style. And so they were pretty much like, we just want you to take this manuscript and think of each page like a poster. And, you know, so it was really like I had this creative freedom to basically, you know, put whatever I wanted based on the manuscript for the book. And so it did come to a point where I was overwhelmed because I didn't want to mess it up, you know, I didn't want to mess it up. And so I was a little overwhelmed, but you know, like I said, you go through all the feels. And so I think it's probably just a cycle for my creative process where I finally just got to the point where it's like, okay, you got to do this. And so you got to make some decisions. You got to make some choices. And this is basically what it all came down to. And honestly, a lot of the illustrations that we ended up with in the book were basically from my personal sketchbook. So a lot of them were images that I created, you know, basically for myself, and this my daily practice that I decided would be a good fit for the book.
Interesting. And I do love getting it to know authors and illustrators' creative processes. It's so diverse and it's so fascinating.
Yeah.
And you know, I like to think of myself as an illustrator's author. So I leave, well, my text is, when it's telling a story, and this is not telling a story, but when it's telling a story, it's evocative enough that the illustrator can then bring their own vision to the project. And if it's not a story, that leaves even more space for the illustrator to, you know, bring themselves and their creative vision and their style to the project. And I think you definitely succeeded in doing that.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah. One of the things that I guess really struck me too when I was deciding like what to create was that, you know, I was told that it wasn't just for kids, that this is not just a kid's book. This is like for everybody. And so like when you share about the diversity that's in the book, that was like the main focus for me, is that I wanted anyone who looked at the pictures throughout this book to be seen. You know, I wanted there to be, you know, like you said, people of all shapes, people of all skin tones and abilities, orientations. I just wanted everybody to feel like, you know, they could see themselves at least on one page of the book, where it wasn't like, oh, this is just for this audience alone. This was like a general audience per se.
Right. And you do bring up an important point. The book is not just for children. It's really a gift book that could be given, yes, could be given to a child, but it could also be given to a young adult or to a full grown adult, mm-hmm. who is celebrating a milestone, of any sort, a birthday, a promotion, a graduation. There are, you know, several books on the market to mark those type of milestones, the most notable probably being Dr. Seuss's Oh, the Places You'll Go. Yeah. But I think there are very few, if any, that depict African Americans. Yeah. So this is, our book is a gift that African Americans can use, or anybody can use, to mark successes in the lives of those that they care about. Yeah. So it is a gift book for all ages.
Carrie, you said that initially your editor came up to you with this idea. Is that something that happens often to you?
Yes, this happened particularly with Sonali Fry, my editor at Random House. When we first met, she pitched an idea to me. She was working at a different house at that time. And the project became Freedom in Congo Square. And we've worked together on a couple other projects in the same way, Standing in the Need of Prayer, which is also based on a spiritual, and the spiritual has been extended. That was her idea. But this time, when she wanted me to do the graduation book, the celebration book, I thought about extending a spiritual as well. And of course, the one that I chose this time, she didn't ask me to do the same thing again. But the one I chose this time, of course, was This Little Light of Mine.
Yeah. Neat, neat. Such a iconic song. And I love the idea of giving a picture book to an adult to celebrate something. I think a lot of folks would go, picture book, I'm 40 years old, whatever. But I know I received kids' books at different points in my adult life, and I really loved it.
Yeah.
I have purchased kids' books for myself as well. Along with being an illustrator, I also have homeschooled my kids. And so, you know, we live in the library. As a matter of fact, before we came here, before I got prepared for this meeting, we just left the library. And I picked out a lot of books for myself, and that I feel was one of the ways that I got my kids interested in all different types of books, was that I would pick out books that I thought that I would want to read that were children's books. And they would sometimes pick up those same books and enjoy them as well. So I agree. It's a great gift for adults too.
Yeah. Carol, what do you love most about writing kids' books?
Well, I like the fact that that the audience is children. I believe children are the most important audience for just about anything, whether, you know, books or other media as well. Because they're like sponges, you know, they're absorbing what they experience, what they observe, and they're brutally honest about whether they like what they've read. And they're hungry for knowledge, and they can be extremely giving when they have enjoyed a text. So I just like the idea as a writer. My books have won lots of awards, but there are also some rewards that I have experienced as a children's book author. And one is knowing that children whose schools I may never visit, whose names and faces I may never know, and whose cities I may never even visit, are reading my books and are perhaps being touched by them. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think it's very important and there's a lot of responsibility involved, of course, when you're writing for children. But the reward of knowing that you have, you know, touched a young life and perhaps changed a child in some way, or changed their, you know, their mode of thinking in some way, is just, it's just so rewarding for me.
Yeah. As someone who has done educational magic shows in schools for over 35 years, I agree with you going in. And it's such a responsibility to take that time, whether it's the time that a kid is reading your book or the time that a kid is sitting in front of you watching your show. It's very important to give them much more than they came in for it. It's
right.
They can leave it really having experienced something that can change them. I'm wondering, Takeda, have you had an opportunity to do the school visit thing yet?
Yes, I have gone to a couple of schools. I went last year.
Uh-huh.
Did a couple of, well, one school and one library event.
Okay.
That was like a parent and child event at the library. So yeah, it's fun.
It really is fun. Carol, I know myself, there have been, you said kids can be brutally honest. I do have, of the thousands and thousands of shows I did over the years, I do remember this one little first grader who stood up probably right in the first 10 minutes of my show and let me know he wasn't having a good time. And that stuck with me. But I also know the kids ask lots of really interesting questions. Is there a question that a kid has asked you over the years that kind of stands out in your memory?
Yes, I often present with my son. There are a few questions, really, but I often present with my son, Jeffrey, who is a poet, a rapper, and also an award-winning illustrator. And one kid asked, "How did you two meet?"
I was in a hospital. Just
yeah. How did you meet? best dad would be the funniest one. Well, I birthed him.
What was your son's reaction?
You haven't met yet.
That's great. I love that. I have to ask Carol because, you know, I get pitches, a couple of dozen pitches a day from different publicists, from Simon & Schuster, Penguin Random House. What stood out to me, and it's weird, like there's something in a pitch, it has to catch my eye early on. The fact that you had Boston in your name, caught my eye since I'm here in the land of Duncan. How did Boston get to be part of your name?
Well, I own the joint, but I don't like people to know. So no, my dad's name was Boston. It's a family name.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my maiden name.
Very good.
And how we came by it, I have no idea. My family, is from, the Eastern Shore of Maryland, but there may have been some of us, there were some Bostons in, the Nantucket area. A very famous whaler was from that area named Boston. And I have not established the relationship, my family's relationship to him.
Well, we can just make, if it's a good story, you know.
Yeah. I'll take it. I'll claim it.
You know, Takeda, Carol said earlier that she is an illustrator's author. I think I'm quoting you right. Is that something that you noticed in the manuscript that Carol really was giving you lots of space?
Yes. Yes. That's why I said that sometimes, you know, I think it's like with anything, sometimes when you have too much freedom, it can be overwhelming. But, you know, at the same time, as a creative person, you really enjoy that because it also challenges you and helps you to go beyond what you thought you were capable of at the beginning. Because I've had projects where I've pretty much been told, you know, what to do for each page, and also projects where I've been given, like, the freedom to do, you know, whatever I want, pretty much. And I will have to admit, with those projects, I feel like a stronger connection to it because I know, like, kind of like the blood, sweat, and tears that I went through, or, you know, the limbo with my creativity that I went through to try to make sure that I brought to the project my best and conveyed it, you know, in a way that would be well received.
Yeah.
So
very cool. And Carol, go ahead. I don't mean
I believe I once heard Ashley Bryan say that children's picture books are the only museum that some children will ever see. So, you know, that adds even more importance and responsibility to the art that you create, Takeisha.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Well, that certainly is true for a lot of kids and for a lot of adults. Their exposure to art is they're exposed to much more art through picture books. And Takeda, I received the F&G copy and the finished copy of Let It Shine, and the illustrations are beautiful and could be worthy of a museum spot.
Thank you. I like that quote because it lets children see that there's different ways to create art, especially in picture books. You know, you have collage, you have, you know, paintings, you have, you know, there's all different styles. You have the realism as well as the stylistic. You know, there's some books that are abstract. So I really do feel like that quote is very strong in identifying that, yeah, that is a good place. Right in your home, you get to have like your own personal art museum in your home. And so I enjoy doing it.
Yeah. That'd be kind of neat, framing some of the images or you know, after you've read a book 5,000 times, we frame it as one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Carol, how did you, learn to become an illustrator's author? Was it just natural for you, or did it take some time?
Well, I've dabbled in visual arts myself at various stages of my life. I by no means consider myself an artist, but I think I have an artist eye when I'm writing. So, you know, I may have a vision, but I'm not going to impose it. My vision has to come through the words. Mm-hmm. And then the illustrator can take that vision and make it what they see of it.
Yeah. Great. Well, before we ask you to tell us where we can go to find out more about Let It Shine, a celebration of you, I'm curious, Kara, do you have a project that you're working on that you can give us a sneak preview of?
I have a project that's coming out in the summer called Black Hands, Builders of a Nation. And so it talks about the contributions of African Americans to the building of this country.
Awesome.
And at various junctures in history. And of course, it'll coincide, the publication will coincide with the 250th anniversary of our republic.
Beautiful. I love that.
It's illustrated by Gregory Christie.
I love his work.
Will you come back to celebrate that as we get closer to
it? I would love to.
All right. Open invitation. Takeda, how about you? Is there a project you can give us a sneak peek of?
Well, there is another book that I have that's being released, I believe, in the spring. It's about Juneteenth. It's a board book and a part of a series that they have about the holidays. So,
wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, you're both invited to celebrate those books here on Reading With Your Kids. Let's tell everybody where they can go to find out more about the book and more about you. Carol, first, where should folks go to learn more about you?
cbweatherford.com. I am Carol Weatherford on Instagram and on Facebook and on Threads.
Okay.
And I think Blue Sky also.
Takeda?
Yes, you can go to my website, takeidaandrews.com. And that's T-E-Q-U-I-T-I-A Andrews.com. And I'm also on Instagram with Takeda_Andrews. And that's about all the social media I can handle is his Instagram.
We've had a great time with the creators of Let It Shine, a celebration of you, a picture book for everyone in your life. Our guests have been the author, Carol Boston Weatherford, and the illustrator, Takeda Andrews. My friends, thank you so very much for being on Reading With Your Kids.
Thank you, Jed.
Thank you for having us.
This episode of Reading With Your Kids is sponsored by Ramble Office. You know, before I tell you about Ramble Office, let me tell you about what travel used to look like for me. When I take the Reading With Your Kids studio on the road, it was like a lot. I had one box for the mixer, another case for microphones, a satchel for my laptop, cables everywhere. And I always felt like I was forgetting something. That's why Ramble Office really clicked with me. Ramble takes everything I used to juggle, tech, gear, personal stuff, and puts it into one smart, great-looking unit that's designed to be a mobile office, not just luggage. Everything has a place. Everything stays protected. And when you get to where you're going, you're ready to work. Instead of digging through bags or repacking your life every time you move, Ramble keeps your setup organized and ready to deploy. Travel days stop being chaos and start being productive. It's sleek, modern, built for people whose work doesn't stop just because they're on the move. And if your job follows you, whether that's podcasting, teaching, consulting, or creating, Ramble is worth a look. Go to RambleOfficeAnywhere.com, all one word, RambleOfficeAnywhere.com. Use the promo code READ, R-E-A-D, and receive 5% off any product. It's exclusive for Reading With Your Kids listeners. Check it out today, RambleOfficeAnywhere.com, promo code READ. Hey, my friends, I have a super idea you are going to love. How about this weekend, turn your backyard cookout into a storybook celebration? Fire up the grill, crack open a few of your favorite picture books, and serve up Big Fork Brand's legendary bacon sausage. Made with nitrate-free bacon and premium pork, it's juicy, smoky, and unforgettable. Top it off with Big Fork spicy Chicago fire sauce, and you've got a meal as bold as the characters in your favorite bedtime tale. Get 20% off your order using the promo code READ at BigForkBrands.com. That's BigForkBrands.com. Promo code READ to get 20% off, because nothing brings families together like great food, great books, and a whole lot of flavor. Big Fork Brands. Read, grill, repeat. Joining us right now from the Sunshine State of Florida, where I should be, our guest is here today to celebrate her new YA novel. It's called The Accident. Please welcome to the show, Lori Miller Case. Lori, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Delighted to have you on. Tell me about The Accident, please.
Okay, The Accident is part coming-of-age novel and part YA mystery thriller. There's been a hit-and-run accident in a small Connecticut town, and a beloved high school football player has been killed, and the town is just reeling. And my protagonist is a 15-year-old girl named Hannah, who overhears her brother and his best friend, Zach, talking seemingly about the accident. She and the reader only hear bits and pieces of the conversation, but it sounds like they may have been involved. This best friend, Zach, is her crush, and over the course of the novel will become her first boyfriend. She vows to keep their secret as the police investigation unfolds, but it's the secret is a very heavy burden for her to carry. And ultimately, two different truths about the accident emerge, and she has to decide where her loyalties lie.
Wow. That is a pretty heavy burden for anybody, but especially for a young woman in high school.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think a lot of people who live in the cities, I don't think they understand just how big a personality that the star football player in a small town high school, that's somebody that's out there, somebody that everybody knows about and everybody's talking about and cares about and wants to know all about.
Exactly. And I set the book in a small Connecticut town like the one where I live usually when I'm not in Florida, which is mm-hmm. Simsbury, Connecticut, because I think in a small sports-loving town like Simsbury, or like any of the towns around where I live, the death of a high school football player, I mean the death of any mm-hmm. high school student, and particularly of a football player, would just really have everyone, would devastate the whole town, but also would have everybody talking. I mean, it would be all that anybody would be talking about. Mm-hmm. And I wanted this to sort of be part of the background of the story, because on top of the burden of carrying this secret that she thinks she has, she doesn't exactly know the true nature of the secret, but everyone's always talking about it. It's all over social media. It's streaming on all the different platforms, on people's phones and computers, on the TV, and she just can't get away from it. So it's added stress and tension to the story and to her life.
Yeah. You know, as you're talking about, you know, the tension and the stress and everybody's talking about it everywhere, I've known for quite a while, since I'm almost 100 years old, that, you know, high school today is a lot different than it was when I graduated. But boy, it really is. When you think about it, there is no place for a lot of kids to hide, to get away from the gossip and the rumors and the secrets that are happening in their schools.
Exactly. And I also think something that's very different because of social media, which I also didn't have mm-hmm. so much of when I was growing up, is that people sort of grieve out loud on social media. People have Facebook pages even after they die, and people are writing things on their Facebook pages, and, you know, people are commenting, and people are talking on all the different platforms and sharing. You know, what happens in my book is that people are sharing in the beginning and the opening of the book, people are sharing video footage of the accident scene, which is a lot for a high school student to have to come to terms with the death of a fellow student and someone that she knew. And unfortunately, in today's world, an increasing number of students are having to deal with this. You know, it's hard enough for a child to grapple with that, but then to have to keep on seeing it and hearing about it, and it's just like a constant barrage of this troubling information. So I think it makes it a lot different than it used to be.
You know, as you're mentioning that, we are recording this interview the day after the mass shooting at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island, just 40 minutes or so from our studio here and not too far away from where Lori lives in Connecticut.
And also, I'm an alumni of Brown University, so this is really heartbreaking to me.
Yeah, I'm sure, and I'm sorry to I didn't realize.
I feel really horrible for all those students and the families and that they have to go through this.
And like the characters in your book, they're going to be seeing this in the news, on social media, different accounts. I've seen one young woman's Instagram has been popping up on my feed that, you know, she was being locked down and now we're out and this is what we had to eat. And it's like this, it is so much. If I was a student that had been, sheltering in place until 2 o'clock this morning, I don't think I'd want to see it over and over and over and over again.
I know. Well, yeah. I know that they canceled finals yesterday and I'm not sure what's happening today, whether they're just canceling all the finals. I know that the person of interest they caught didn't turn out to be the
right.
So I'm not sure what's happening now, but
I think the last I heard they asked everybody to go home for the break.
I think that was a good decision.
Yeah. Did you ever think that we'd be having and at the same time when this was happening in Brown, there was a shooting on a beach in Sydney, Australia, and
that's tragic too.
We have video of the assailants just sitting there, looking like they're in a hunting blind. Did you ever imagine that this would be something that we'd be living with?
No, I didn't. But I think it is such a part of people's lives now. I mean, I heard the statistic on the news yesterday. There have been like 70. School shootings in the U.S. this year alone. It's crazy. So I really wanted to explore this idea of how these sorts of incidents are played out on social media and how this affects the students that are involved, even those that aren't involved.
Sure. Yeah. Yes, because I'm imagining, a kid in. It happens in one town. The word is going to spread, and there's going to be talk and rumors, and throughout all the different communities that surround that small town.
Yes. Yes, and the other thing that happens in my book is that, she has a best friend, Alex, who she has always told everything to up until now, and. She doesn't feel like she can tell Alex this because her brother could be involved, her boyfriend could be involved. But everyone's talking about it all the time and speculating about who it could be and what could be happening. And her friend Alex is also a journalist, so she's always, especially interested in pursuing the story and investigating and finding out the truth.
Yeah.
So this is another added stress. And I throw a lot of stress at my character. One of my writing teachers, kid-lit author Christine Pakula, always tells us to be mean to our characters and to throw lots of obstacles in their way and it adds to the tension and it also increases the stakes of the story. And my I'm very mean to Hannah over the course of the story. Other things happen and, you know, other secrets come out in her family and other things happen with her friends. She is constantly having to deal with different obstacles and her angst increases over the course of the book. And I think this adds to the tension of the story.
Tell me, was Hannah based on anybody?
Hannah wasn't really based on anybody, but I guess I was a worrier when I was her age. My children might say I still am. but I imagined myself in her mind, mm-hmm. sort of. You know, what would I have thought in this situation? I mean, I guess any author thinks like that because I only really know how I think and how uh-huh. other people tell me they think. She's not based on any particular person, but certainly a lot of my thinking and thought processes affect how she sees things.
Yeah. Did Hannah do anything in the course of the writing of this book that surprised you?
I wouldn't say it surprised me. I felt pretty much in control of my character's fates as I was writing. But definitely, I'm not the type of person. I'm a journalist also. I spent most of my career as a journalist. I just recently have been transitioning over to creative writing over the last many years, I guess, last decade or so, couple of decades. But as a journalist, I make very meticulous outlines before I write a story. I know exactly where every quote is going and what exactly I'm talking about in what order. When I write fiction, I just have a premise and I start writing it and I just see what happens mm-hmm. and kind of make it up as I go along. They call that pantsers versus plotters. Mm-hmm. The plotters plot it all out. The pantsers just go by the seat of their pants. So sometimes I would be surprised at how an idea would just pop into my head while I was writing. Mm-hmm. of a direction that it could go in. Mm-hmm. So there were a couple of times in the novel where, I don't know, there was one moment when I had Hannah walking home from school and just going into thought spirals about, you know, how were they involved? What should she do? Should she talk to her brother? Should she ask Zach? And then I just had this thought, like, there should be a police car in front of her house when she gets home, because that would be really stressful, you know, and then she sees that police car and she freezes and she wonders, like, oh no, are they onto her brother? You know, are they questioning her brother? Are they going to question her? What if they ask her, does she know anything? She doesn't know what she knows, but she knows something. And is mm-hmm. she going to lie to a police officer? And so things would come up like as I was writing and the police officer ends up playing a pretty important role, in a subplot of the book, which I hadn't really planned, but ended up being an important part of the book as well.
Yeah. Tell me, what's that transition like from a journalist who is dedicated to learning the truth and not exaggerating and being very factual and making sure you get things exactly right to someone who is writing and making everything up and you're just kind of letting your imagination run wild?
Well, first I'll say that I was writing fiction long before I started to be a journalist.
Okay.
I used to write stories as a kid for fun, and I always wanted to be an author since I was mm-hmm. as far back as second grade, because I actually have my writing journal from second grade. We had a writing journal that we would write a line to the teacher every day, and she would write back to us. And in that journal, Mrs. Slater asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, and I said an author.
Awesome.
So I knew all the way back then. But I put aside fiction writing when I graduated college to start my journalism career at the New York Times, where I was a reporter trainee. And, you know, I came back to it. I was about to hit a really big birthday, and I decided, wow, I better get started on that fiction writing if I'm ever going to write a book. So I went back to grad school in creative writing at Wesleyan University. And I'd say that making that transition from journalism to fiction writing was, on the one hand, was challenging, because I would just face this blank page and I wouldn't have all this research and all these mm-hmm. interviews to draw from. I would just have to be making it up. But on the other hand, it was kind of freeing because I didn't have to worry about fact-checking every little thing. However, I'd say that my, you know, one influence from my journalism is that I wanted it to be, even though it's fiction, I wanted it to be grounded in reality so that people would believe what they were reading and get mm-hmm. caught up in the story and believe it was happening, you know, as they're reading it. So I did interview experts, just as I would as a journalist. I interviewed a couple of justices, one juvenile justice, one just regular criminal justice. I interviewed a criminal lawyer. I interviewed a police chief because I wanted to make sure. I had no idea how hit and runs were investigated or what the laws mm-hmm. surrounding hit and runs in Connecticut were or what kind of punishments kids could get, what an arraignment would look like, what an arraignment even was, mm-hmm. You know, what it would look like, what people would say. So my journalism helped me that way. But I also found the fiction writing very freeing because I could just make the story whatever I wanted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a lot of fun. Boy, you know, I think I don't know if I'd want to be a journalist these days. Well, not that I ever wanted to be a journalist, but it seems it's especially challenging these days because it seems like a lot of journalists are at least in as I look at take sides and they're not down the middle. And I think that makes it hard for journalists. I think it makes it hard for the publications they're writing for.
I'd say that journalism has changed a lot since I started as a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I trained at the New York Times, you had to be objective. That was, you had to get both sides of the story. You couldn't take a side unless you were writing an op-ed. And now it seems like every publication is sort of many publications are taking sides.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like which side certain publications will be on. I'd say the stuff that I have written in recent years, I specialized in health for a long time. And I feel like, I mean, I guess now you can even take sides on health. But for the most part, I think that there's research and there's things we know about mm-hmm. medical things. And you can't so much take sides on that as long as if there's a controversy, if you give both, you give both sides.
Right.
Or I wrote about culture and the arts. And again, that's more about people and
mm-hmm.
emotions and not as much about political taking sides.
Right. Right.
So I've stayed out of that a little bit.
Yeah. I don't know. Have you made it to the, since you started your writing, professional writing at the New York Times, have you made it to the New York Times bestseller list, or will this be the first book of Laurie's to make it there?
This is my first book.
Okay.
And it just came out in October, so it's too early to say. But of course, that would be nice, but it's a very difficult thing to achieve.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So why, this is a YA novel. Do you have, are you looking to write in other genres?
I do actually write across genres. I have several picture books in development, a couple finished.
Mm-hmm.
I have a book of linked short stories that I initially wrote for my grad school thesis. And I've worked on those short stories a lot over the years, revising them, written new ones, gotten some of them published in literary journals. So eventually I do intend to try to get a book of linked short stories published for adults.
Mm-hmm.
But right now I'm focused more in the kidlit space, and I'm working on another YA novel. I just think it's really important to get kids reading. I think reading creates empathy because it kind of gets you into other people's heads in a way that mm-hmm. you can't really be in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's just really important for people to read and to write things that are going to get kids thinking about important things. I mean, I think, you know, this book is about secrets and lies. It's about choices and consequences. It's about the gray areas around truth and culpability. And it's the kind of book that gets people thinking, you know, what would I do if mm-hmm. I was in this situation?
Yeah, yeah. I'm imagining that would make for some pretty interesting conversations if a family were to co-read this book together and chat about it on the way into school or ballet or around the dinner table. What do you think those conversations might look like?
I've been thinking about that as I've been listening to some of your podcasts, and I think definitely this whole issue of choices and consequences is an important conversation that parents and kids could have while reading this book together or after reading this book, because about how every decision we make has repercussions. Mm-hmm. And in this book, the choices that characters make don't only affect them, but they affect a lot of other people's mm-hmm. lives as well. And could it affect the whole trajectory of their lives,
right.
Some of the characters. And I think it would be interesting for parents to talk to their kids about, you know, what choice would they make if they were, and they could do this throughout the whole book, really, because there's a lot of different, there's sort of a sequence of choices that are mm-hmm. made over the course of the book that all set the trajectory of the story going in a certain way. And if mm-hmm. any of those choices were different, things could have gone in a different way. And I think it would be interesting for parents and their kids to kind of talk about, you know, what would you have done in this case? Or what would you do if you were Hannah? What would you do if you were mm-hmm. Zach, if you were Rob, if you were the parent? You know, would you make the same choice that they did? You know, it's not so black and white what's right and wrong in this story. You know, because is it okay to lie if you're lying to protect someone you love?
Mm-hmm.
Is it ever okay to lie?
Right. Yeah. No, absolutely. The whole idea that, oh, my brother could be involved in this horrible thing and what should I do? That would make it very, and especially if you're a teenager.
Yeah. The other thing is that I think that teenagers not only have to grapple with some moral dilemmas, maybe not as intense a moral dilemma mm-hmm. as some of these characters do, although some teenagers do. But they also deal often, I think, with conflicting loyalties, and mm-hmm. Divided loyalties is a big thing in this book. Yeah. And I think that teens deal with divided loyalties between their parents and their friends, or their parents and a love interest, or even their friends and a love interest. Mm-hmm. And this could also generate interesting discussions. You know, do you know, what do you do if you're torn between doing something that your family wants you to do versus what your friends want to do, or, mm-hmm. you know, being with lying to a friend to be with a boyfriend, mm-hmm. which is something that happens at one point in this book and has a lot of repercussions for Hannah.
Yeah.
These are all issues that kids are dealing with all the time, especially as they're trying to become more independent and, you know, maybe more influenced by their peers than they are by their parents, or may want to do more what their peers are doing than what their parents are telling them to do.
Yeah, certainly. A lot, and that's what I love about books, and that's what I love about reading with your kids, is that it can just open up. I'm just thinking, you know, reading The Accident together, co-reading The Accident, you have a 2 weeks worth of conversations on the way to school or around the dinner table.
Even this whole idea of how the role that social media plays in mm-hmm. the story.
Yeah.
And in kids' lives.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. We should tell everybody where they can go to find out more about The Accident and find out more about you.
They can go to my website, which is Lori Miller Case. That's LoriMillerCase, LoriMillerCase.com. They could also go to my Instagram, which is at Lori Miller Case Writes. Facebook, Lori Miller Case.
Awesome. I've had a great time speaking to the author of The Accident. It is the new YA novel from our guest, Lori Miller Case. Hey, Lori, thanks for being on Reading With Your Kids.
Thank you so much for having me.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Reading With Your Kids. Well, join us for the next exciting episode of the show. This episode made you smile or gave you something to think about, please consider sharing a link to the show with someone you love. Leave us a 5-star review wherever you find your favorite shows. And, of course, we'd love it and really appreciate it if you could subscribe to the show wherever you find your shows. I want to thank the folks who made today's show so wonderful, starting with our guest, Laurie Miller Case. Please be sure to check out her YA title, The Accident. Also want to thank Carol Boston Weatherford and Takeda Andrews. Please be sure to check out Let It Shine, A Celebration of You. I want to thank my team, Fatima Khan, Chris Daugherty, Jackson Sotolaro, Joanne Lynn. I want to thank my beautiful wife for all the support she gives me. Most of all, we all want to thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. And as always, thank you so very much for taking the time to make the world a better, more caring, more empathetic place. And you do that every time you read with your kids. I'll be looking for you in the next episode of Reading with Your Kids.